Good morning, everyone. My name is Mark, and I am a compulsive overeater. Hi, everyone. And I just want to give a quick shout out to Shia for inviting me to speak to you. Certainly appreciate this opportunity. So I'll try to basically go through the sort of normal outline, what it was like, what happened, what it's like now. But I have been a member of this fellowship for not quite 25 years. I am maintaining a weight loss of something over 100 pounds. And I say something over because I really don't know what my high weight was. I know that I was well north of 275 pounds at my heaviest, and I now weigh just under 170. So at best, at the minimum, 105 pounds, and at maximum, something more than that. I believe I was born with this disease. I have me vivid memories of compulsive behaviors from a very early age. For an example, one story I share a lot is apparently I was a cranky baby at the beginning, and I was the youngest of four, and we were pretty well spread out. My brother, who is the closest to me in age, is 5 years older than me. One of my sisters is 10 years older than me, and my other sister was 14 years older than me. So, as you can see, we were 4 and 5 years apart on that. And apparently, I don't know this for a fact, but it must be to make the story make sense that my parents took turns or something sharing the burden of getting up with the cranky baby. Me. So at some point, my dad made a deal with my mom, says if she would deal with me, he would get up and get himself off to work. So he used to, he would get up and make his breakfast and, go off to work. My sisters, who were in high school, would get up later and do the same. And then my brother, who was in elementary school, and my mom would get up last. So I would get up and have breakfast with my dad. I would hang around till my sisters got up, and I would have breakfast with my sisters. Then I would have breakfast with my mom and my brother. And then I would take like a bowl of cereal or something and go into the living room and sit down in front of the television and have breakfast with me. So if that's not compulsive eating, it certainly does to me. And growing up, I always viewed myself as being the chubby kid in the neighborhood. And that was certainly how I saw myself in my head. But the it's interesting, and this is not that long ago. I can go back and look at pictures of myself as a kid, and I wasn't a fat kid. I really wasn't even a chubby kid. I was just kind of a normal kid, but always thought that I was the fat one. I was always one also that got praised for not being a picky eater, that I could be counted on to clean my plate. Later on, I could clean your plate too. But not being a picky eater was sort of, if not a superpower, it was certainly something that brought praise to me as a child. And that certainly sent the message to me that, the whole thing, eat your whatever, there are kids starving in Asia or something. Yeah, we all heard those messages, but I certainly did that too. I came to find out later or realized that food was a way that love was expressed in my family. And so food was love, and all of the mixed messages that come with, being growing up in compulsive eating and whatever, messages that it was good to clean the plate. It was good that I wasn't fussy. But also messages that would come just my mom, look at this wonderful dessert I baked for you. You should lose some weight. Like in the same paragraph, if not the same sentence, you should lose some weight. Here, eat this thing I made just for you. So I had twisted sorts of images of how food was. When I got into my college years, the freshman 15, no constraints, living in the dorm, unlimited food. Yeah, I'm sure my freshman year gained more than 15, but I gained weight that I kept for years afterwards. Then in my first marriage, We were both compulsive eaters. Looking back, I obviously know I was, but I can look back at my ex and know that she was, had the same food disease, or at least symptoms as I did and stuff. And and as we went through and doing all of the crazy things that are known to all of us about, trying to deal with our weight, it was, all the crazy diets, definitely. I remember one which basically, we ate, didn't eat anything but like mangoes or something. It was just anything bizarre that looked like it was going to be a magic solution, we were willing to try. And in my view of looking for easier, softer ways, I seriously, thought, hey, major surgery, gastric bypass or something. I really thought that could be an easier, softer way. I'm so grateful that I never had an opportunity to actually try that out by in real life, because I probably would have and would not have been a solution at all. So what happened? I was when I got to my bottom, when I hit bottom, I was in, this was like I said, early 2000s. Okay, I was a heavy, much heavier as you were. I've had my knees scoped 3 times, which means one of my knees a bit has been scoped twice because of the cartilage damage from carrying my weight around. I don't remember which knee got it twice. At one point, because I was overweight, I was a terrible snorer. And rather than do the hard solution of losing weight at the time, which was impossible to be because I was in the throes of the disease, I did manage to have surgery. I had a slightly deviated septum corrected by surgery. Again, looking for any easier, softer way. Went to a sleep study and found that I had a mild case of sleep apnea. I had heartburn all the time, basically, and stuff. So beyond the food and the physical, as I mentioned, my marriage had failed, and I didn't know why. I was burned out at jobs. I was in my job, had done the same thing, same sort of job too long. And finally, in an act of desperation, I reached out to a friend who I knew had something. We talk about sponsors, reach out to someone who has what you want. And and I knew he had something. I wasn't sure what. I knew he was in another fellowship. But when we went for a walk around the plant where we worked, and I was telling him, what I needed, or basically how life was, he didn't tell me to go to a meeting. He gave me the phone number of his therapist, which was what I really needed at that time. So, went in, started therapy, both private, one-on-one, and also in group therapy sessions and stuff. And while going through therapy, I think, I don't know, I remember it being something like maybe a number of years, five sticks in my head. May not have been that long, but anyway, multiple years where I would talk about anything. Let's talk about my mom. Let's talk about my ex. Let's talk about my crappy job. Let's talk about whatever. Stay away from my food. I did not want to talk about my food until finally, after I had healed enough, I think I was moved to address my food in a group therapy session, sort of a gestalt kind of a thing where the therapist set it up. So I was sitting on one pillow and he had another pillow, which was my food. So he'd have me talk to my food. Then he would have me sit on my pillow, on this other pillow, and talk to me from the voice of my food. And in that piece of work, I learned that food was a lover for me that never rejected me. And in my twisted playing up that the idea of a lover was like, oh, food is some kind of Bond girl that never turns me down. That is more messed up than I want to be even then. So in my next session, one-on-one, my therapist gave me two phone numbers. Says he was another 12-stepper himself in another fellowship. He gave me two phone numbers, says these are some OA meetings. I suggest you check it out. I did that call. The Gift of Desperation, March 27th of the year 2000 was the date of my first meeting. And I walked in that meeting and I was home. It was, oh my God, these are my people. I felt so accepted. I felt the love in the room immediately. I said, these people have something and I don't know what it is, but I want more of it. And that was the beginning of my journey of recovery, as I said, almost 25 years ago. And one of the things I've learned is my disease is progressive, so my recovery has to be progressive. And my abstinence has changed and gotten different and changed over the years. So I don't have a simple abstinent rule that I list to as an abstinent date, like many of us do. We all come to this differently. Abstinence is a very personal thing. What I've learned that abstinence is the set of rules that I can follow so that I know whether I'm okay or not and how I'm doing my food. So I treat as a in lieu of having a specific abstinent date, no sugar, flour, whatever it is, I go back to that date of my very first meeting, and I say that is when I began my journey of recovery, which is what has brought me abstinence. So, having done that, I was blessed always with a willingness to do meetings. I would do meetings when I wouldn't do anything else. I say that I would do a rather leisurely journey through the steps. It took me a long time to do step four because I was terrified of step nine. I knew that making amends was going to be just so hard. I don't know. Maybe I thought I was going to jail. I had no idea, but I had all the worst fantasies of what step nine might be like. And the best way to avoid step nine is to not do step four. So it took a long time. I finally found the willing, or the willingness came to me, and I did. I've worked with the sponsor. I've gone through the steps. And as I mentioned, my disease is progressive, so my recovery has to be progressive as well. And that's very true of all of this. So right now, my food plan, I'll describe my food plan. I weigh and measure my food. When they say, do what my sponsor, or I've heard sponsors say, or I've heard it said, if you want what I have, do what I do. And I had weighed food originally in a very kind of nutrition centric way, so much protein, so much of this, so many carbs and stuff, and then fall into the trap of, some of the commercial weight loss people where you have the free foods. Oh my God, there's not a bigger trap for a compulsive eater than a free food. But my sponsor had a very simple way of doing that. He just weighs his plate. And he has, my breakfast can be this many ounces, my lunch and my dinner is such. And I thought that was way too hard, or way too complicated, or way too simple. Like how could that work? But finally I tried it, and I used the amount that my sponsor used. And at that time it was 10 ounces at breakfast, 12 at lunch, and 12 at dinner. And when I put that on my plate, it was like, oh my God, that is like, I'm going to starve. Look at all this plate that I can see in between the piles of food. And I found that I didn't starve and I was satisfied. And it's a thing I can do. Over time, I have, as my body has changed, I've modified the weight on that it makes an abstinent meal for me. I'm down, it's like 8.5 ounces. Which, oh my God, that does seem like not very much, but 8.5 ounces per meal. I learned that I can't, that you can take things that commonly come in eaches. I thought if you're going to have a banana, you would have a banana or two bananas. No, I can have a half a banana and be satisfied. I can have a part of a potato. So what does as was mentioned earlier in the meeting, having accountability as a tool, if you will. I follow this and I text my sponsor every day what I ate and how much. That level of accountability has given me the ability to stick with this food plan for something like 5 years at least. I went scrolled back through all my text messages one time to find out how long I had been doing it. And we were back into 5 years ago that I had been texting my food every day and stuff. And So as I mentioned earlier, abstinence is a set of rules that I know what it's like. So in progressive, when I retired a year ago, if people asked me what I was going to do for, I can see I'm a little under 5 minutes now, so I'm almost done, but thank you. What was I going to do in retirement? And one of the things, I had a neighbor who's, strong arm me, and I need to learn to play golf. I need to do this. I need to do all these things. What I didn't actually expect, but happened, is I added meetings, and I added service. So now I have more meetings. I routinely attend 3 or 4 meetings a week. I have done service at the meeting level and intergroup level, off and on forever, on that. But in the last couple of years, I've started doing service, been doing service at the region level. And then through the Secular Service Board, I was given an opportunity last year to go to World Service. And so I'm doing service at all these different levels. And I mean, it's not necessary to do service at all these levels. I can see that I need to step back from some of this because we need to have rotation of service to be a healthy fellowship. But doing more tools, doing more, sponsoring. I have 4 sponsees, not so much step work, but food sponsoring and stuff. So I have people texting me their food as I text my food to my sponsors. And my program has never been stronger. My absence has never been stronger. I feel like there's, I used to work in the nuclear industry, and they have a thing they call the margin of safety. You don't have just one emergency diesel, you have two. You don't have one safety pump, you have two. You have multiples of things so that you have, defense in depth. Well, I need to have defense in depth and a margin of abstinence. So, and when I do, when I'm doing all these things, I don't white knuckle anything. I have food thoughts, I have urges, I see things, and I recoil from it as if a hot flame, as it says in the big book. And it's anyway, so I feel that I'm in a very a place of safety in my program as long as I keep doing the things that work. And it's just what I'll say, what I've heard at one other meeting shared and stuff, is someone said to someone, it just keep coming back till the miracle happens. And I believe that the program has brought miracles to my life because I could not imagine myself weighing as little as I do, not having heart pain, not having knee problems, having some physical ability to get up and get around, having tools to live my life without, without the denial and hiding and avoidance that led to that, which will really kill my first marriage. So my life is so much more worth living now, and the program has brought me so many of those gifts. And with that, I'll pass. Thank you so much.